Parsha Vayakil is difficult for many reasons. But one of the main reasons why is when you get into this Parsha, it just seems so repetitive. Everything just seems to repeat itself from what we had before. I mean, we've seen all these psukim. Many of them seem to be the exact same thing. And it's not just that we repeat everything in Parsha's Truma. It's almost as if the Torah doesn't want to offer an explanation for it. It's almost as if the Torah is saying, well, here's what it is, and either live with it or whatever. You know, that's how it is. And it shouldn't be that way. The Torah should have at least given an excuse, at least said, here's why we're doing this. Here's why we're writing it a second time. At least something should be said. See, when Eliezer goes through his story, and we'll talk about this a little bit later, the Rashi points it out immediately and says, Sichas Avdei Avos, that the talk of an Eved, of somebody so great as the Avos, that talk is so important to us, it's greater than the mitzvos, and therefore we're going to go ahead and mention it. That it's already said. That's already strange, why would it do such a thing? The Rishonim immediately come here. Here, some Rishonim mention it, some don't, and it seems to be so obvious. What's the deal with all this? Now, it's more than that. Parak Lamed Vav Pasuk Ches is where everybody catches on, because this is where it says, where we start repeating, Vayasu Kol Kocham Lev Osei HaMelacha, all the wise men who were doing the work, they made as a Mishkan, the whole Mishkan, as Yeriel Shesh Mazor, Tzkeles Argon Tzol Hashani, Kruv Maseh Koshev Osei Osam, and he made them with the tapestries and everything that was on them, and he put them all together. But it's got to be pointed out, if this is correct, and we're really going to the Mishkan, that means that the Torah spends over 400 psukim speaking about the Mishkan. 400 psukim dealing with the Mishkan directly. Whether we're taking Parshas Truma, Parshas Tetzaveh, Parshas Vayakil, Parshas Pekudei, and few psukim in Parshas Kisisa. 400 psukim. And we can barely get one pasuk to tell us certain mitzvos of the Torah. 400 psukim on this. This is the strangest thing in the world. Why? Because the Mishkan was never meant to last very long. Let's think. If Klal Yisrael would not have made the Mishkan, you'd assume that they would have entered Eretz Yisrael immediately. What were they waiting for? What would they be waiting for? So they would have entered Eretz Yisrael in Cheshvan, in the month of Cheshvan. Instead, they started collecting on the day after Yom Kippur. They collected everything 2 or 3 days later. They started putting the things together, and everything was ready by Hanukkah. They didn't set it up until Rosh Chodesh Nisan, and then they're ready to leave on Chaf Ir. Without the Mishkan, there was no reason to delay. So really, they should have left immediately. And even if you say, oh, well, the Mishkan was so important, they needed something right now, fine, I understand that. They need something right now, so we're going to put it together, we're going to try to put something together. On the other hand, you're looking at it, you say, well, wait a second, if we're going from Nisan to Ir, we're going from Nisan to Ir, we're talking about a total of almost maybe 30, 40, 45 days before they're going to go to the base, before they're going to go to Eretz Yisrael and get the base of Mikdash. You're putting everything together, you're allowing this Mishkan to take up so much space when the total amount of time that it was supposed to be was for a total of less than 2 months. That's what you wanted the Mishkan for. That is a Pella Atzum. That for 45 days you're going to have a Mishkan, and we spend 400 psukim on it. Even though, obviously, we're in the Midbar for 40 years and not 45 days, nonetheless, what is the point of mentioning these things again and again if it's all meant to be temporary? And everything could be superseded by the time the Base of Mikdash comes around. Yeah, what's the point?
They would have wanted to go 45 days later.
They still need something.
Well, no, who said they're going to build the Base of Mikdash on day one?
Agreed, and they didn't, obviously. They waited over 470 years to be able to create it, and that's definitely true. Nonetheless, what were the people thinking? They knew the Mishkan was temporary. So you think that one of the greatest things is that they were willing to donate all of their money for a temporary thing. That is a little bit of a pella. So what you're saying is correct, but nonetheless, it's still a kasha. So Ramban points out that in actuality, there are 5 times when we go through these psukim. But each time is for a different reason. For example, in Parshas Truma, the command was first given to Moshe Rabbeinu what they had to make. That's Parshas Truma. And Kisisa was brought to the attention of Bezalel. They told Bezalel and Aliyev and all the workers what they were going to have to do. And by Yaakov Paraklamet, hey, in the very beginning of the Parsha, the workers were told generalities so that they would be able to understand what they had to do and make their own Chokhmah, add to it, and make even more so what they were going to do. These psukim over here hint to what they did, that they did it perfectly, they did exactly as they were supposed to do, that the workers took the generalities being told. So again, there's one to Moshe, a second one to Bezalel, a third one to the workers that they could add on to. This one over here, the fourth one, where we're starting from Parak Lamed Vav, is going to tell them they did it, it. They didn't lose anything whatsoever. And finally, next week's parsha, we mentioned that all the kilim were brought to Moshe, that Moshe could see that everything was made perfectly. Says the Ramban, the five times each one of them had one reason for it, but why write it so many times? Says the Ramban, to add more and more schar for the people that wrote, that made these vessels. This was not easy. And obviously wasn't easy. You're dealing with slaves in Mitzrayim. Many of them probably had nothing to do with their hands. They were working in fields. They were dealing with other things that had no shaykhis to all this. The Torah feels that this is something that we have to talk about to tell you how great these people were and to add schar to them. The Medrash says the famous line, Yafa Sichas Avde Avos, that the talk of the Avadim, of the Avos, is so important. Yosemi Gubashol Torah. The Torah rehashed the whole story with Eliezer and Rivka to be able to show us the way that a slave does things. And for that reason, we say it over here as well. This is the way a slave works. You do nothing that a Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't say. Your master tells you to do something, you get up and you do it, and you do it perfectly, and you do it quickly. That's what you do. And that's why we go over it again and again and again. It comes to show us that when donating money to something that we're supposed to donate money to, we do it immediately, we don't delay, we do it perfectly, we have the right intentions, we go in immediately with the right things. And this was the perfect parsha. It's not so many times when Bnei Yisrael didn't mess up. We don't find it very often. Even in here, there is one mess up within the Mishkan, but it's not really a mess up. Anybody remember? The Nesiim. The Nesiim are missing the yuds of their name, says Rashi, because they said, we'll wait for everybody else to donate, and whatever's left, we'll fill in. We'll put in for them. But there was nothing left. So Kadosh Baruch Hu was mezakeh them with the Avnei Miluim and the Avnei Shoham, that they were able to get those things instead. But still, even that, there was honestly, there was a little bit of greatness in their mistake that they made. Nothing else went wrong. Another possible way for the Ramban to understand it is, whenever we find a way to praise somebody for something that they did right, you keep praising over and over and over again. When we saw that they had done everything correctly, say it again and say it again and say it again and keep doing it over and over and over again. The Orach Chaim HaKadosh really says this as well. The whole Maisa Mishkan is special according to him, and the Sforno says this as well, because everything was done exactly correct with the Ratzon of Hashem. Seemingly the same as the Ramban, maybe little nuances of difference, but it's the same idea of they did everything correctly, they did everything perfectly, nothing went wrong and everything was good. And Victor Miller is the one that says, like, it's crazy. They didn't mess up. The fact they didn't mess up is such a huge thing. The kavanos were correct. Can you imagine the thought process when giving the donation? There was not one person that went ahead and said, fine, I'll give because I feel like I have to. Everybody gave l'shem shemayim. That seems to be the idea that's brought over here that we've never had any other time. And then comes Repersh. Repersh is a different idea. Every part of the Mishkan means something symbolically. One of the things that we went through last Thursday night, Noach, you were there for it, a few other people were there, we were able to go through some of the things Repersh goes through and what the Kelim of the Beis HaMikdash mean. It's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. In fact, Repersh has a whole piece, if you look in his selected writings, he has a whole piece that explains entirely what he thinks of every single Kli. Every single Kli and why it had to be made and what it means in the grand sum of what a person is supposed to be like and how a person is supposed to act. Every Kli meant something. Everything is supposed to be there symbolically. There was a hidden meaning, says Repersh, about it behind as well. There was a meaning that allowed them to understand what their lives were all about. So we have to remember, says Repersh, this is not a book. The Torah is not a book that just has little things and that's that. This is not just a little thing where HaKadosh Baruch Hu was like, oh, and I want a house, and I want a candelabra, and I want a little table, and I'd like some bread on that table. This is not a HaKadosh Baruch Hu just saying like a cutesy little thing. I'd like a little dollhouse that you make with little things inside here. Make it gold. I like special things. It's not what it is. Every single thing had to be done the same way a Sefer Torah has to be written. L'shem Kiddusha Sefer Torah. Everything had to be done in a certain way and in a certain aspect that would literally could change the world if it's done in the wrong way. This means that every word of the Torah means something, that every Kli over here means something, and what that tells us is that these artisans, led by Bezalel and Aliyah, made the Kelim, and when they delivered the Kelim, and when they actually assembled everything together at the end of the day, every single person not only did it perfectly, says the person adds on to it, they understood the meaning behind the Kelim. They dedicated their lives to what these Kelim represented. They wanted to live lives that were entirely filled with the Kelim of the Beis HaMikdash. This is their life now. Every single worker thought that way. Every single worker said to themselves, this is what, not what we should do, this is what we have to do. And that's what you're learning from these Pesukim over here. Moshe Rabbeinu taught them what they needed. needed to know, but he couldn't tell them that you have to do it, that you have to be involved. They took it upon themselves and they said, we're doing it. We're going to do this perfectly. It's not just a building, it's a way of life, says Reverse. And for that reason, we mentioned it over and over and over again. They changed their lives because of the Mishkan. That we're going to say. But then we have a third shot. The Netziv, Rav Chaim Kanievsky speaks about this as well. It's the same basic idea. The Netziv says that it's not repeating themselves. The Pesukim are not repeating themselves. There are Chidushim that you can glean from every mention of the Pasuk. We have this line that goes through. Whenever you see a Parsha that's repeated, Kol Parsha Shenishnis, it's Mishnas, it's repeated for Dover Shenishchadish, but there's a Chiddush here. Whenever you see something repeated, look around. There's something different. And there are Chidushim that you can learn from right over here. That's what the Gemara Bava Kama says in Samach Dalet, and it's obvious. There are so many times where a Lashon Yachid turns into a Lashon Rabin, where a Lashon Rabin turns into a Lashon Yachid, where words are switched around, where something seems to be saying this way and it's something different. In Pshat, you can learn fundamental differences, ideas that might be gleaned from looking at what it is in Shuma and what it says in Parsha Vayakil. Aside from that, says the Netziv, this is obvious. See, we're limited. We're such fools. We look at the Torah and we just look at the Pshat and we say, like, oh, well, that's the Pshat, and if the Pshat doesn't make any sense to me, then the whole thing should be thrown out. There are some times where Remez or Sod rules, and we just don't understand that. Where the hints of what the Torah wants to say, or the secrets behind the Torah, which we call Kabbalah, are really the reason why the Pesukim mention these things in this place. And sometimes we forget that. So we look at the Pshat, we say, well, it doesn't make any sense, it's just repeated. And the truth is, it's not. There are very the tiny little differences. And in Remez, one letter out of place makes all the difference. In Gematria, one letter that's added on or subtracted makes all the difference. And in Sod, in Kabbalah, I don't even understand what to say regarding that. There are so many little things that we can learn from something being repeated or something adding on to the Torah itself. That's the idea, says in Netziv. We're looking at it in Pshat and we're saying, why is it repeated? If you looked at it in Remez and if you looked at it in Sod, you wouldn't have that question. You would not ask the question. It wouldn't be a Shiloh, says in Netziv. That's the idea behind it. Says Rav Chaim Kanievsky, he says, if you look at it, it's obvious when you see the differences. He points out a few, and we'll say one or two of them. But he says, what the first time that we mention the Mishkan is before the Egel Azov. Parshas Truma is what the Mishkan would have been like had the Egel Azov not happened. Parshas Vayakel is the Mishkan after the Egel Azov has happened. And there's major differences between them. The way it is, the repetition is not a repetition. It's to show us what we lost, what we could have had, and what now is. For example, the famous example is that the Aron Kodesh was a big shiloh about how to make it, when to make it, etc. We all know the big issue with Bezalel and Moshe Rabbeinu, that Gemara and Brachos Daf Nun Hei, that Moshe Rabbeinu told Bezalel that you should make, when you make the Kelim, you should make the Aron, and then the Shulchan, etc., and then the Mishkan, and then the place where it's going to sit. And Bezalel said, Moshe Rabbeinu, how does that make any sense? It makes no sense. First you got to build the building, and then you got to build all the stuff that goes in it. Because otherwise, you don't build the building first, where are you going to put all the stuff until it's ready? And we all know what Moshe Rabbeinu answered, right? Moshe Rabbeinu turned to Bezalel and said, well, that's good. Come on. Think of Bezalel's name. You're amazing. Yeah, come on, Ellie. You said, Bitzel El Hayisa. You must have been in the shadow of God. You got it correct. Everybody knows that. Bitzel, you're 100% right. It should be the Mishkan first. But the truth is, that's not what they did. They made the Aron first, and then they made the Mishkan. It's amazing. Now, this drush comes from Truma and Vayakel. In Truma, the way it's written, you see it clearly. When you look at Parshas Truma, you're going to see that it's written as Aron, right? And then we mention the menorah, then the Shulchan, and it goes through. And then afterward, only at the end does it mention the Mishkan. Only at the end does it mention the Mishkan, the Krushin, and the Urios that were on top, and everything like that. On the other side, in this week's Parshas from Vayakel, it's the Mishkan first, the Urios first, and then it goes into all the Kelim that go inside. It's learned from over here, Bitzalo, so to speak, this Parsha. And most Rabbeinu's line is that Parsha, but in actuality the Aron was first. Not only that, I already said it. When was the Mishkan made? When was it finished? Anybody remember? Hanukkah, right? When was it set up? Rosh Chodesh Nisan. So it didn't matter. The Aron Kodesh was sitting for 2.5 months without a building. So now, if it wasn't set up yet, anyway, the Tzalos Taina is not true. It doesn't work because the Aron Kodesh is going to sit on its own without any question whatsoever. It says Rav Chaim Kanievsky, all of these lines, all of these midrashim is from the fact that we're repeating it in a different form to tell you Tzalos Svara, which is this week's Parsha, and Moshe Rabbeinu Svara, which is last week's Parsha. Except for that, if you look in the Zohar, which you shouldn't because we're not ready for that, but if you would, then in the Zohar it says, in Parshas Truma it says, you take the donations, may eis kol ish. From every person you take a donation. And this week's Parsha says, kichu me'itam. Take from them. The word kichu is used. Well, over there it's may eis kol ish. There's a difference. Before the Egel, every person donated on their own and every person wanted to give. Here, there was a bit of a kichu involved. After the Egel, people felt a little bit worse. In other words, before it would have been more giving, more generous, more better. Now they felt the idea of we got to give a kapara for the eagle as of. They felt the need to give it as opposed to the want to give it as much. Truma is the want, this vayakel is the need. All of these ideas, you can go on and on and on about this. Reb Chaim Kamsky points out they're all there to be able to understand what it is. And then comes the Rabbeinu B'chaim. Really, the idea behind it. Every time we read about the construction of the Mishkan, we pay attention to its details. If you go through and you understand what you're reading, that's hard to do because there's a lot of stuff about the Urios that I still don't fully understand. But if you read it and you understand it and you can picture it in your head, says the Rabbeinu B'chaya, it's as if you're building the Mishkan at this moment by yourself. You're doing it. So reading through the Parsha again and again and again gives you this chus of building the Mishkan again and again and again. It's not just Stam that we're repeating the Parsha. We're giving you a chus by doing Shnai Mikra Katargum, and it's easy because there's barely any Rashi. You're able to go through and get this chus of building up the Mishkan again. You do it for yourself. It's amazing, says Rabbeinu B'chaya. And if we do so, says Rabbeinu B'chaya, it's possible we'll be able to bring about the future of Beis HaMikdash on our own. Just by reading it. Just by going through the Parsha, the Rabbeinu B'chaya says, you can go ahead and get it yourself, and that's the reason why it has to be repeated. So four basic ideas of why it's repeated. And then comes Reb Shor. Reb Shor in Alek HaValib of his tremendous Kiddush, he says it regarding something else, and I think it's obvious that he meant it to be specifically for this parsha, even though he doesn't say it this way. I think it's an obvious idea. He starts by quoting the Kiddush HaRim, and everybody knows this line, Vayakam Melech Chodosh al Mitzrayim. A new king came up in Mitzrayim. And the Chassidish, the Kiddush HaRim asked the Kasha, Chodosh, his Chadshus, to feel new, to feel like you're fresh, and to feel like everything's going well, that is not an Indian, that is not a subject that is given over to the non-Jews. That's something that should be specifically for us. That feeling of renewal, that feeling of Yitzchak should be ours. Why? Because the non-Jews follow the solar calendar. Let's leave the Arabs out of it for a little bit. They follow the solar calendar, while we follow the lunar calendar. I guess in this Hasidic vein, what Rav Shor is trying to say, and it's brought down, the Sfasemis brings this down, since we follow the lunar calendar, and the moon waxes and wanes, becomes bigger and then smaller, bigger and then smaller, we have the concept of renewal every month. Every month is a brand new renewal. Every month we're sitting there and we're bringing ourselves back and we're doing it anew. But the sun never changes. The sun remains as is. It's the same thing every day in and out. So the concept of Yitzchak is not by somebody who follows the solar calendar. The concept of Yitzchak should be only by someone who follows the lunar calendar. And in that sense, how could it be by Yakam Melech Chodosh al Mitzrayim? How could the word Chodosh be used to describe the king of Mitzrayim, the king Paro? It shouldn't be used in that way. That's something unique for us. How could it be used for him? And the answer, through the Medrash, when the Jews no longer gave their children bris milas in Mitzrayim, when they no longer renewed their covenant with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, given by the bris milah itself, they lost the bechina of Yosef HaTzadik, of being Mosif V'Holich, of adding on to themselves and being Mechadish themselves. And when they lost that thing of Yitzchak, that bit of Yitzchak, it was snatched from them by the Egyptians. When the Egyptians made them their slaves, they didn't just enslave the people and make them physically their slaves. Spiritually, the Jewish concepts that they had were grabbed by Paro and Mitzrayim and taken for themselves. They grabbed something that allowed them to have their own Yitzchak. And only when we left did we get the Chodosh back. Do you get it? I'll give $1 to someone who figures this one out without looking at the sheets. Where did we get the Chodosh back? Rosh Chodosh. Okay, that goes $1. I don't know who said it first. Is that you? Yeah? Okay, so I'll go for that. That's not bad. HaChodesh HaZeh Lachem. The very first line that we're given, the first mitzvah that we're given when we leave Mitzrayim, the first mitzvah of all time, is HaChodesh HaZeh Lachem. It's Chodosh. We get the Yitzchak back. And that moon is the perfect example because of what it does. Starting to grow and bring it around. And so too this time of year. During spring, in the times of spring, we sit there and we watch every it and renew itself. We see things, well, then we get snow again. But we see things happening and renewing itself, and we're looking at the world and we're saying, wow, it's growing again. It still has the ability to grow. We remember this after the long, kind of hard, pretty good winter that we've had this whole time. Yeah.
When was the first time we had the mitzvah of Chodesh? Was it Nisan?
Yeah, in Nisan.
When we built the Nisan.
That time, right then, Rosh Chodesh Nisan went 24, before the Mishkan, the year before that. That would have been when they were still in Mitzrayim. That would have been the idea behind it. And it, I'm sorry? Makas Bakot, right before, well, 15 days before was when Moshe Rabbeinu received the Nebuah. Rosh Chodesh Nisan is when he was told, here is the new moon, Kazera V'Kidesh. Look at this, and you could be Mekadesh the month. That's the first time they got it. So technically, it was really the 29th of Adar that they had really received it for the very first time. That's the concept. Yeah.
And did they start building the Mishkan on Chaf Gimel Adar?
On the next year. It's a Kasher, Chaf Gimel or Rosh Chodesh Nisan. Right, Chaf Gimel or Rosh Chodesh Nisan. But either way, but that's the next year when they were in the Midbar already.
Right.
This, they're still in Mitzrayim. They're still there. That's not going to be there. That's the concept of Yiskashis. Now, so what's the Pshat in Vayakel? Yeah? Yeah, 100%. That's what I mean. Mosif Beholich. That's the idea of trying to keep going. So I think it's obvious now. What's the Pshat in Parsha Vayakel? Because sometimes we have those days where we feel like everything is just the same. And we're not renewing ourselves, and we don't feel it anywhere. Especially in, listen, technically almost Rosh Chodesh Nisan now. Right? We have the added month of Adar, which kills us sometimes. We're sitting there and you're expecting it, and when Rosh Chodesh Adar Aleph comes around, he's like, oh, but it's almost firm. It was so close and taken away from us. It feels like we got to do another month of this. That idea of like not being able to find any news. And Vayakel is the perfect parsha for it, where nothing seems new. Everything is old. It's the same thing. I don't see anything different here. Why am I going through this? That's exactly why we coincide Parshas Vayakel with the beginning of the spring, and when we end up going through Achodesh Zelachem, usually Vayakel comes out on Rosh Chodesh Nisan for that very reason. The Vayakel Pekudei, which is this idea of everything seems like it's the same old, we specifically say no, this is the time of Yiskachis. Even here there's Yiskachis. Even here you can find something new, you can get something from it. Since we're sure that's the idea. Ani Yishena V'Libi Er. I am sleeping, but my heart is awake, says, and depending, Shlomo Melech or HaKadosh Baruch Hu, referring to in Shir HaShirim. Ani Yishena, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is referring to Gullus, because in Gullus we feel like we're sleeping, like we're old, like we have nothing. V'Libi Er, my heart is awake, there's a Geula within me, there's these scotches even within me. Even within the old, you find the new. That's the pshat behind Parsha Vayakel. I feel like it's that way. No matter what we have, and it's not like things always get easier when you grow up. I mean, for anybody who's going to be an accountant, you know the job is going to be the most boring job in the world, unless you love numbers. And then, I hear it. Exactly. Got to switch out. Right? Some people can't handle it. It's a difficult job to be able to handle, to be able to say it's the same thing over and over and over again. You got to find a way to feel renewed and invigorated, and that's the concept, the idea behind this parsha. Second thing. Okay, we're done with that. Oh, and there you go. And then, more gematrias to get through. Here's the next part. I'm skipping to the first pasuk in this week, in that parak. In parak one above pasuk Adol, it says, that God gave them wisdom. The word bahema, you immediately notice something's up. Okay, straightforward. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave them wisdom. They were able to do what they needed to do. B'tzal and Aliyah and all of his workers got all the stuff done. And even though there were crazy stuff, the menorah, the shulchan, everything else was weird, they weren't sure what to do with it. Nonetheless, everything worked out well. It was all good, and that's that. But the problem is the word behema. That doesn't make any sense. It should be bohem, or bohem, I should say. In them. I mean, I'm not a grammarian, so that's not me. But the wording should be v'asa b'tel v'aliv v'chol ish chokham leiv asher nasan Hashem chokma utvuna bohem. That God gave it to them. Or lahem, I guess, whatever you want to say. But bahema is strange. Why would it say it that way? So the Rabbeinu Bachaya says, the final hey in the word bahema is to tell you that it was a godly wisdom. That the Shekhinah was with them. I don't fully understand this, but those who know how to work the Yidke Vavke, right, the last hey of HaKadosh Baruch Hu stands for the Shekhinah, and that hey is what we're referring to over here. Bahema is also four letters. This hey stands for the Shekhinah being together with them, and therefore they had the wisdom of the Shekhinah that allowed them to do Kalim, to make Kalim that they never should have been able to be able to do, and that's the idea behind it. That's one thing, the Rabbeinu Bachaya. Rabbeinu Ephraim says the word Bahema is the Gematria of 52, which is the Gematria of, it's Kelev, dog, but over here we're saying Yud Hey Vav Aleph Lamed, a shame of the angel of wisdom. Hashem allowed that angel of wisdom to give them what they needed to know. They reached the 50th level of understanding, the Shar Nun of Bina, the 50th level that you can get to, and that's what they got by Hema. Hema is the gematria of Nun of 50. So Bahema means, the line is that the Malach Yehu, whatever his name is going to give them the wisdom that they needed to do whatever they needed to do. So that's the Rabbeinu will find. That's already a Kabbalistic idea of what's hinted to within the word Bahema. But then there's another way of looking at it. Says Rabbi Nebuchaya, normal human beings cannot fathom this level of wisdom. The pasuk says, "Nivar kol adam idas." People are idiots. That's basically what it means. Nivar adam kol das. That's in Yirmiyah. In Tehillim, "Ish ba'ar v'lo yeda uksil lo yaven ezdos." Ish ba'ar, we're idiots. Lo yeda, we have no idea what's going on. But the word ba'ar, even though I'm translating it as idiots, is really more potent. Ba'ar is really be'ir. Beis ayin yud resh. The ear is translated by Targum as an animal. That we are like animals. That we have no human wisdom. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us everything, and we're just a glorified animal. That's all we are. Without HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Shechina, without that, that's it. So when Hashem filled these Chachamim with wisdom, He wanted them to know that it wasn't their own Chachma that allowed them to be the people that they were. That it was God that allowed it to happen, and He's showing them, you guys are a bunch of animals, and I gave you the wisdom to understand it. That's it. You think that you're regular people. You think that you got the wisdom on your own. You think you have that amount of gaiva that I did everything. I was able to be this person. Look what I was able to do. Says the Kadosh Baruch Hu, you're all a bunch of animals. I gave you all the wisdom you needed to be able to get to where you are, and that's that. Without that, obviously, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you're just behemoths. You're just behemoths. So it's not literally that HaKadosh Baruch Hu put wisdom in animals. It's that Hashem made people who are like animals into actual people. Now, the Yafei Torah in the Medrash says it a little bit differently. Anyone who donated money to the Mishkan, automatically, even if their heads were completely empty like an animal's head, and they had no wisdom at all, they could not understand a word, once they donated money to the Mishkan, they immediately had a level of understanding which was greater than anyone that we can imagine. They got a level of understanding that went through. Their money being given was almost like something that popped in their head. They got chokmah like you couldn't believe. And the Shach seems referring to the people themselves and says they wouldn't have any gaiva this way. When they saw one, Bezalel, who clearly was talented, the kid's a 13-year-old kid according to the Medrash, and this 13-year-old kid is getting up and making all these crazy things. Clearly we've got an unbelievable talent and a kid who knows what he's doing. For him not to have any gaiva, he needed to see that some fool who nobody's ever heard of before, this guy who everybody thought was a Nebuch who, like, you know, nobody treated with respect or whatever it is, got up and made the most beautiful items for the Mishkan, and he was shown that it's not him, it's a Kadosh Baruch Hu. The person was given special gifts from a Kadosh Baruch Hu to be able to do what he needs to do. The Shach says that therefore the gaiva that Bezalel should have had, he never had. Now they say that in other ways as well. Ahaliyah from Shevet Dan, that also allowed for him not to have the gaiva that you have for Shevet Yehuda, so great. They knocked it down. Regardless, the idea is that the animalistic people ended up becoming these great people. That's one idea. But then the Mi'amalez takes the Medrash 100% literally. Medrash says that he put Chokhma in animals. That he allowed the animals to be able to understand things they didn't have. He brought the wisdom into behemos v'chayos, is the wording in the Medrash, that they used to help bring and make the materials. That the cows got up there and were like, oh, I think you're little to the left. That when they brought it on horses, the horses were like, you don't want it there, you want it over here. That the actual, there was Mr. Ed's going on in the Mishkan. And they were all around. I don't know, the dolphins, I guess you can expect it. They were probably laughing. But everybody else, right, the animals were sitting there helping them out in everything they were doing. It's amazing. They had chokmah to be able to understand what they were doing. That's how the Mi'am always learns it. He gives another pshad that refers to the people, as we said from the Rabbeinu Bechaya. But he said in Parshat Pshad, it refers to the animals themselves. That's what it refers to. And that's what it means. If you look back in the pasuk, Asher Nosan Hashem chokmah Truna Behema. Now it should be Bibehema in the animals. But the drush is that they're giving it to the animals. The Marzav on the Medrash says it as well. It says any animal that was directly involved in the Mishkan got Chochmah. For example, the Tachash. The Tachash got Chochmah. The rams that were used to make the reddened ram skins. The goats the chilazon. We're all given a bit of chachma, all of them. We're given a bit of chachma to make sure they would be available for the Jews to be able to take them. Now, it does make sense. I've always had the kasha. How in the world did they get the chilazon to come for the Mishkan? Where'd they get it from? So in Pashup Shad, it's because the Egyptians had it. The Egyptians also lived in the Mediterranean Sea. Whatever it was that was the Tchelis, if it's a Murinex snail, or if it was, I don't know, some type of squid, or whatever it was, whoever had it in Eretz Canaan, they had it in Mitzrayim as well. So they took a bunch of raw material Tchelis, and they brought it out with them. So that I can get. I guess that's fine. But there was so much Tchelis used, where did they get replenished from? The idea is that the Chilazon had a little bit of Chachma. Kadosh Baruch Hu put in the minds of these little snails, and they're like, oh, let's go that way. And all the snails traveled to where the Jews were. Maybe they used the Be'er Shomerim to do it, which would be awesome. Maybe they just did like a whole long procession, right? And they went there and did it. Maybe that's what they ended up doing. And in the end, that's where they went. I will tell you, I suppose it was a couple weeks ago, but not here, just somewhere else. When I was once in Eretz Yisrael, when I was living there, so I was bringing my kid to a babysitter somewhere. So I was right by, I don't know, Mavram Mitla, if anybody remembers, like the little areas in Ramat Eshkol. I was crossing Mavram Mitla, and I crossed over, and I was supposed to go through a parking lot, and after I went through the parking lot, I was supposed to turn right, etc. That's where I was going to go. So I went down, and I was riding the stroller, and then all of a sudden, like, there was like a line in the street, and I figured it was like painted or whatever it is, and I went right over it, and that was that, right? I went back. As I was walking back, I looked back, and I saw that the line had gone, instead of being the line right there, like there was just one line going through, I saw that the line like turned, and I'm like, that's so cool, who painted it over? Then I looked down. It was tons and tons of caterpillars. Tons and tons of caterpillars. They were going in a line, and I crushed a bunch of them. I was Larry and Moshe and a couple others, but they were dead. And they went around them, and they kept going. Here's where it was. I was standing there, and I couldn't believe it. I was getting late for Seder, but you know me with animals, so I wasn't going anywhere. Right? And I looked. They were coming all the way from someone's backyard. They went up a wall inside somewhere where they must have been born from, and they were going slowly but surely, each one grabbing onto the one in front of it, and they were going one by one, all the way up to a tree. And I watched them go up the tree, and they went all the way up to the tree to become beautiful butterflies. Okay? I didn't actually see them become butterflies. I'm just assuming that's what ended up happening. And they went in one line all the way through. And I'm sitting there, I'm like, I thought that maybe I'd had way too much to eat that day. There's something wrong. There's no way. No way, right? And drink as well, right? There's got to be something. There's no way. I looked it up. There are such things. You can look it up yourself. It happens in the Middle East. There are such caterpillars that are like this, right, that end up following each other and go all the way, whatever it is. This is how I picture the chilazon. The chilazon got a little bit of chachma. Kadosh Baruch Hu was like, time to go. They're like, all right, got it. And they start walking through the desert, and there's like a whole line of chilazons. And when a Kadosh Baruch Hu, when Moshe Rabbeinu is like, all right, we need to make chilas. And all the people are like, what's chilas? He's like, that. They're right here. All the chilazons, whatever they were like sitting there. There were fish that would be awesome, like flopping one after the other, coming out. And they all got there. Everything was there. The Takash, according to what we learned a couple weeks ago, did not belong in that area. They weren't indigenous to that area where they were supposed to be. So what were they doing there? HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave it chachma to be able to get there. The Torah Shlomo says that's what it means in Shabbos Chavchet, that the Takash was nizdamein to Moshe Rabbeinu, that they happened to be where Moshe Rabbeinu was. Something entered the Takash's mind, these little unicorn creatures, and these animals are just like, oh, we got to be here now. So they ran. They went exactly where they were supposed to be. That's where they went. And that's the idea. That's the wisdom that they were implanted with. The idea is, we see this elsewhere. Yosef HaTzadik, when he first brought Yaakovinu to Eretz Canaan, the Medrash brings down that even the horses and the donkeys cried. Anybody done Sota? Sota Daf Yud Gimel? Afilu Shusim, Afilu Chamorim. Even the horses and the donkeys cried. How did donkeys and horses cry? So the way they translate the Medrash is that the people who are like horses and the people were like donkeys who never cried at anything. Even they cried at Yaakov Yinu's death. But now you could say, no, even the horses and the donkeys understood. At certain points, HaKadosh Baruch Hu allows for a certain bechira to be given over to animals, a certain amount of chachma. They understood what was happening, and that's that. They literally cried when somebody like this left the world. That's the idea. And obviously, the Teva with Noach. How did the animals get to the Teva? How did they get there?
Code.
I'm sorry?
Code.
A code?
Code.
Oh, coat. Oh, you mean because Noah had that coat that pulled them all in? But the ones that were in Australia, the ones that were far away, what about the ones that didn't live there? How would they have gotten there if we understand it to be a bit of chachma that a Kadosh Baruch Hu gave them? It's not a shayla anymore. They were able to walk their way in. They all came because they all understood it.
The coat.
The purpose of the coat was to get them in the right place or to calm them down? Maybe to calm them down because their lions were still like, oh, that's a sheep, I would assume. That maybe there was something like that as well. The samsul refers to animals as well the same way, but he understood that once they saw the animals acting that way, now Bezalel understood. It wasn't that they understood from the fools that were around them. The animals made them understand, oh, wow, God can give chokmah to anybody. So my wisdom is not my own. It's what a Kaddish Baruch Hu gave me, but anybody could get it that way as well. That's the idea. But the samsul says something crazy. A couple years ago, we learned the Medrash that the women were able to spin wool on the backs of the goats themselves. If you look at Rashi, right, the women were able to spin the goats. Tabu et ta'izim. They spun the goats. Meaning they left the wool on the animals themselves, spun the wool while it was still on the goats, and then the men went and cut it off. Why would they do that? Well, it's obvious. If the women were in nida, if they were bleeding, then there would be metame, the wool that they were making for the base of Mikdash. You can't make anything tame for the base of Mikdash. So what did they make sure to do? They spun it while it was on the animal's backs. Animals cannot become tame. So if you spin it on the animal's backs while it's on the backs themselves, and then the men cut it, it's not going to be tame. So that was the brilliance of these women, that they were so brilliant, they realized you can spin on the goats themselves and everything all works.
But
yeah.
Doesn't Rashi say there's an extra though?
That's the Chokmah
Yisera. But I'm saying it's... Okay, fine, it's coffee is there, but I guess, but that's halacha that they're doing. They're not doing something.
No, granted, what they were doing, though, the way of spinning is an impossibility. Have you ever tried spinning goats? Well, the wool of goats. Maybe that's a little bit different, but you don't, right? So here's the kasha. The kasha that stops over asks is, fine, I understand that the woman had to do that. How did the goats not go crazy? Can you imagine somebody pulling your hair and, like, pulling it from one place to the other, but not being able to cut it off? They were probably going crazy. They were holding it from one to the other. How did they not kick back or start moving around and say, like, no, this is not cool? Because the goats got that little bit of Chokhmah Yisera from HaKadosh Baruch Hu that allowed them to understand this is what needed to be done. And therefore, because they got that Chokhmah, no problems. They sat there and allowed it to happen. They were allowed themselves to be that way. And Reb Chaim Kanievsky says another one. This is just absolute, pure Reb Chaim Kanievsky. He brings down Yerushalmi Yuma Perek Dalet Halacha Dalet, which all of us had in our heads without a question. Obviously, we know this. He says, one of the ways they refined the gold, and they made the gold into the way there was. Obviously, they burned it in an oven. Apparently, another way to do it is, what they did was they cut the gold into tiny little pieces. And then they surrounded those little pieces of gold with dough. They took that dough and they put it in front of ostriches. They had the ostriches eat the dough together with the gold. And then eventually the dough obviously went into the systems and the gold was out of their systems eventually as well through the small intestines. Apparently the acid and anything else that might have been in the ostrich's stomach, which is interesting by the way because the acid reflux of an ostrich is extremely low. So I don't know if maybe we have the wrong animal or it's something different. The reason why, that's why ostriches eat glass and things like that to cut down things in their stomach because they can't take cellulose because they don't have acid reflux. They don't have that ability to eat. But that's just me speaking. So regardless, the amount of acid that's inside there refined the gold to such an extent that it shined better than it ever could be after they took it out. Why anybody would touch it afterward, I have absolutely no idea. But regardless, that's what they did, and they brought it out. Here's the problem. Every process of anything that was done for the Mishkan had to be done l'shem shamayim with kavanos as you were doing it. How in the world are you going to have the proper kavanos when you're giving it to an ostrich to churn around in its stomach and then go to the bathroom with it? How in the world is that going to happen? But if the ostrich is Ezra Chaim Kanievsky got extra chokmah because the animals had this little bit of wisdom, then the ostriches were eating the little bit of dough with the gold and saying, I'm doing this l'shem shamayim to refine the gold for the base of Mikdash, for the Mishkan. That's what the ostriches were thinking. And therefore it was done l'shem shamayim, l'shem mitzvah, and it worked. That's how it goes. It's unbelievable. Yeah, I don't know how many, again, but we all knew that Yerushalmi, we just have to apply it. That's Reb Chaim Kanievsky applying it. That makes a lot of sense. I'm sorry? Recognize. Yeah, that's the idea. We'll end with this. Reb Sternbuch says, not like any of these. He doesn't say like Reb Chaim, the Ksavs, or the Ksamso, over the Miyamluis originally. He doesn't say like any of them. It's referring to the people. Adamu Behema Toshi Hashem. Man and animal will be saved by God. The Behema refers to people that act like animals. That's what the Gemara Kulin says. Now, you think if a person acts like an animal, that's a bad thing, right? That's a bad thing. A person acting like an animal is an animal. That's what it is. Not necessarily. Says Rav Schermbach, a person can act like an animal in the sense that they are humble and willing to listen to whatever their master tells them to do. A donkey does everything its master tells him to do. The horse does everything its master tells him to do. The dog does everything its master tells him to do. In a certain way, if a person is humble and does everything his master tells him to do, he is an animal in that regard, in a good way. He's an animal. When Bezalel told them what to do, these workers what to do, the workers acted like behemos, says Rav Schermbach. They did not add or subtract anything. They didn't do anything on their own. They did exactly what Bezalel told them to do, making it as if they didn't understand how to do it themselves. And for that reason, HaKadosh Baruch Hu put extra chachmah in them, that for everything else in their world, they knew more than they ever could have thought of. They got a tremendous yeshua of their own by acting like animals in a good way. And later I found this idea in the Rash. I didn't need Rav Schermbach for it. The Rash is a Baal Tosfos. The Rash says the same thing. Because they made themselves like animals and did whatever they were told, they were zocha to become chachamim and nivonim. That's the idea behind it. So what do we do today? So far we went through why the repetition. We gave four different answers. One based on the Ramban, the Orach Chaim HaKadosh, the Sforno, Rav Avigdor Miller. Right? We also mentioned Rav Hirsch, that idea from Rav Hirsch, which adds on to those. Then it's Rav Chaim Kanievsky, that it is brand new. And the idea from the Rabbeinu Bechaya, right, that allows this as well. Rav Shor, we can sort of add on to the other three. But that's the four that we have, and Rav Shor, we added on to everything else. And then we asked what it means, Chochma Behema. We had the first shot, which is that it's the Shechinas with them. Then we said that the people who are like animals ended up becoming big chachamim in a bad way, so they were bad animals. Then we have the idea that actually the animals became wiser, and then we have the idea that the people who acted like animals in a good way ended up becoming wiser and becoming smarter, etc. That's the idea behind it. Shkoyach, everybody.